Central Friday. It's Stan Riccio, Bick Nizar here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza.
Do that again.
Holy man, I ran out of breath at the end. That was, I'm so disappointed in myself.
I was a little worried I was going to have to pull up the read there. I was like, we have to tag in? He's got enough for the shift here?
Came close, but maybe we'll try again next segment. Of course, Boston Pizza, your place to get in on the big game whenever there is one. Canucks, we'll get back at it tomorrow against the Seattle Kraken, which I'm not too sure we are. I don't know. I feel like the excitement to watch the Canucks is waning a little bit for a few people right now, and they suffer another loss to the Anaheim Ducks yesterday. It was a pretty tough one. wasn't great. What was the reaction on the post game show, Bick?
Justified. Mm-hmm. Anger paired with a level of dismay, and it's up there with the Seattle and Utah losses of the year. I think people are just looking at this and like, this is one of the worst losses of the year, given the context of where you are in the season. Hard not to agree with the people.
Yeah, the 2-0 lead through the first period, you're looking pretty good, and then things obviously go the opposite way. And a lot of the same feelings coming out of that one. You have certainly some questions about Elias Pettersson. You have questions about how they've put this team together. You have questions about the coaching staff. There's questions everywhere. Let's get to the open on Canuck Central. Oh, no, not.
We're not going to get to the
open. That's right. We've got Yannick coming up there. I've done this before.
Rattled off the top here.
I needed a reminder that we were going to Yannick here in just a couple of moments.
Showing up and competing.
I'm sure Yannick will have some big thoughts on this game, but we'll get to the open coming up a little bit later on in the show then. It's, man, like last night, okay, I'm just kind of wondering where the game really turned because they looked so comfortable through the first 20. We're all having a laugh at Tyler Myers taking over the game and just absolutely obliterating the Anaheim Ducks through that first period. And then it just all starts to crumble, and there's no point in that game where they stop the snowball from growing on them.
At any point.
Yeah.
At any point. And we said, like, hey, the final 40, they weren't as good. I spent some time rewatching it. I know that's I'm a glutton for punishment, watching this game.
I would consider that, like, self-torture.
The first, a little bit. Oh, because I had the extra hour today.
Yes.
And I was like, oh.
What am I going to do with myself? I know.
Can't do laundry all
day. Let me rewatch Elias Pettersson shifts from last night.
I fast forward through the first period.
Okay.
But I got to the second period. I was like, all right, let's watch how bad this last 40 minutes is.
Yeah.
And the first 3 minutes were actually fine. The Canucks, like, defended. They repelled the blue line, stymied zone entries, had a 2-on-1 themselves. And look, maybe this is a hot take, but that weird play where Mintikov comes in and just throws like this harmless, hapless shot. That's going wide on Shelov's. And he like kicks it back the other way off his left pad.
Yeah.
And then has to make a blocker save on the Brett rebound. Leeson.
Yeah.
On a play that shot's also going wide. But that whole sequence just like looks so weird and so foreign. And you can actually see the energy flip for the Ducks right away. They're like, oh, this guy's shaky.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a great first period. But what was that? And a couple of guys just started moving, and that there's no whistle on that play. The next whistle is Vetrano's goal. But you can see the next time they enter the zone, they're taking some shots. They're trying some things out. And that, like, flipped real fast.
Let's bring Yannick Hansen into this conversation. This analyst brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Yannick, another tough night for the Vancouver Canucks. And you can point at a lot of different things. Shelov's could make a couple more saves for them. But it's just a game you got to have, especially after going up 2-0.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's obviously easy to afterwards say shoulda, woulda, coulda, but again, I think you got it right, Lankinen. Again, you mentioned a couple of goals coming back that you would like that he had last night. He was fine in the first early on, but a couple of those goals you don't like. There's also some of them he can't do anything about, like the deflection and stuff like that. But it's like right now you need every single win. I know you don't want to play your goalies back to back and all these things, but I feel like in this case you almost have to, and that's hard because Silov's played well in that game. He lost the first one he's played, and he played well in the first as well. But again, it's just not the same consistent good goaltending that you've seen from Lincoln. And again, you want to get the guy some games. He's played well in Abbotsford and all these things. I get it. But right now, like you mentioned, you need results.
The mood from the coach and Quinn Hughes when speaking last night just felt low. And it felt like a gut punch game that they had this opportunity to make a 3-point gap here. And look, the season's not over by any stretch, but it just felt like there was a realization of, hey, okay, like maybe we just don't have it this year. Have you had moments like that? And what does that feel like?
Yeah, I think it stems from earlier in the year. Like we seemed fine, or Vancouver seemed fine versus the lower teams that were beneath them. And then again, we had a hard time beating teams above playoff teams and all these things. But now losses to Utah, losses to Anaheim, that doesn't look good in the standings. Calgary is winning some games. Utah is creeping up. You want to get ahead of these guys. And I'm thinking, or maybe interpreting from Quinn's perspective, like playoff is not a success. It's not a success just to creep in and be there and then get blown out. And that's what it looks like. Yeah, you beat LA, which is a good, strong team. But can you beat LA in a 7-game series right now the way you're playing? That's a little more harder to swallow right now. And again, it's not enough to just squeak in and then be there. No, you want to win a series. You want to win two to prefer, and then be in that elusive conference final where you can finally see the end, where if we win this one, we're in the Stanley Cup finals. Like, and they're miles from it right now.
Yeah, they look so far away, and that's the tough part because they looked like they were headed in the right direction with where they were 12 months ago, and now everything looks different. You're thinking over every little move, every move ahead that you have to make, and you know you're just watching, and it's. I get it. They can play defense for the most part, though it crumbled a little bit in the second and third periods last night. But there's just no offense. And I don't know if it's on the coach, if it's on the players. I know they lost JT Miller, then they rely so much on Quinn Hughes. But, Yannick, it's just like it's completely anemic. Like they don't generate anything. Anaheim had more shots in the third period than the Canucks did, and they were the team trailing. It's baffling to me that this team can't generate almost anything on the offensive end.
It's almost like the team is full of what do you say, third liners right now. Mm. And before the game, we sit and I look at the lineup and say, oh, who's going to score for me tonight? Well, it could be any one of them, but we don't really know. It ends up being Tyler Myers and Suter, which is great that they're scoring. Don't get me wrong. You want Suter scoring here and there. You want the defense scoring outside of Quinn Hughes. But those are the two goals I kind of hope from the bottom six and D's outside of Quinn scoring. But then on top of that, I need my top six. I need the top six producing on top of those two goals. They do that, you win the hockey game. And right now, they don't have that. You need bottom six scoring to score every single goal, because you don't have the power play to go out and generate a goal. You don't have Petey to take a line out there and generate a goal every single game. So right now you're relying on your depth scoring to score all your goals. And that's not possible. There's a reason these guys are making $2-3 million a year. It's because they're depth players. They're not $80 million players. They're not players that score and consistently every single night, generate chances every single night. Some of them will go 7-8 games between scoring a goal. And you can't afford that when your top six is missing.
Dan and I were talking before the show, and yeah, like these players that you're mentioning, and like there's a lot of likable players on this team, right? Like smart players that can do a job, but the thing that just severely lacks throughout the whole lineup right now, especially with Pettersson kind of in the abyss right now, is just natural traits here. The ability to put some players on their heels. Like Troy Terry isn't the fastest guy in the world, but yesterday, you know, he put a couple of Canucks players back on their heels. And when guys are carrying the puck through the neutral zone, it just doesn't feel like there's any sort of pop or speed coming at teams right now.
Pop, and you don't necessarily, like, JT Miller didn't do that with speed either, but he's doing it with different ways. So they have speed in the lineup. You see Hedl speed, you see O'Connor speed. But what you don't see is the consistent offensive threats that they used to have. And we touched on this many, many times with JT. If you're trading one of these two guys, you're not going to be better for it because the player you take out is a driver. And Hedl looks like potentially he could be one down the road, but he's not a top six center right now. He's a good player. He made this team deeper and better in the sense that we needed those players. The only problem is you removed somebody who could anchor a line. And yeah, you got three depth pieces, but again, depth pieces don't make up the scoring. They round out your team. They make the team better around your core, and you remove the core player. So it's like your team are worse after the trade. And you were hoping the trade would solve another problem and then rounding in another guy that would kind of take over, but it didn't happen. So now you're even worse than you were before the trade.
On Hedl, like, there are encouraging things that he shows. He's got a little bit of speed, and I like that he always, like, comes to the puck, tries to find the puck, but it does feel like there is something missing. You just kind of referred to it, that he's not a confirmed top six guy. So what's the next level for him to get there?
Production. Production's got to be there. That's the first thing. You can talk about yourself as a top six winger or center all you want. But if the numbers don't go along with it, you're not it. So that's kind of what you have to see. And for that to happen, you to have these 70, 80, 90 points, which we'd like to see from top six players, that requires production. It requires generating chances on your own, by yourself, with your line mates. So again, he's coming into a new team. He's still on the younger end, finding his ways, so to speak, on a new team and all these things. But it is consistency is what separates the good from the greats.
Feels like there's a lack of composure, too, when they do get some offensive chances. You know, Höglander has the breakaway, and he skies it over the net. There was another two-on-one chance, and Hedl's unable to get a pass across over to Dakota Joshua. And, you know, those opportunities potentially put the game away because you're up three goals maybe if you convert one of those instead of the 2-0 that you end the first period with. And that's just those are the moments that they're not taking advantage of in some of these games.
Do you remember when I played how many breakaways I had?
How many?
And how many? A lot that I didn't score on as well.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things, like, finish. If I had the finish, would have been playing a different. But it's like there's a separation between players.
Right.
And that's what's lacking between a Höglander that's a third liner and a Höglander that's a top six winger. Then you're like, okay, this guy's going to score when he gets this one. Or this guy, he might need three breakaways in order to score. Will he get those? Yes, he will, because he works hard. He's a fast skater. He's got all these attributes. But it takes him more scoring chances to score. And that's just the name of the game. It's not that he's not trying. It's not that he doesn't want to score. It just takes more because the finishing skill, the elite skill, is just lacking just a little bit. And it's one of those things where you'd love for them to score in all their chances, but it's like it just takes more. And that's where depth is fine, because then somebody else will do it maybe that game, and then we get a goal anyways. But when you're lacking your top six, your power play to generate, now everything has to go right. All these guys have to score on all their chances. Otherwise, we don't win. Like, your 2-on-1s, that they almost have to turn into goals, too, because we only get a couple of them, and it's not a 2-on-1 by our elite player who's going to pick a corner and score. No, it's a 2-on-1 by our third liner who might bury it in the pads for a rebound or something like that.
Yeah, and it's they don't generate a ton of those chances, right? So it makes you notice everyone that goes awry as well. And on top of that, like last night, you know, it's good to have Quinn Hughes back in the lineup. He is the driver of the offense. I think he has 11 shot attempts, but it started to become one of those games where Quinn was like, okay, I guess I have to do it all myself in order for us to score. And, you know, that's not a solution to the problem either, because then it just became easy for Anaheim to front up on Hughes and really take away his shooting lanes. And even when he did get a shot through, it didn't seem like there was enough traffic around the net to really make anything of it.
Yeah, no, it looked that way. He was forcing it, and a lot of the shots were somewhat off weak position, so he doesn't get all of it. He does walk around the top and kind of circle around the whole net, but then in a bad angle. But it's one of those things, like, if he generate 11 shot attempts and the other team does their thing as well, then they become so much harder. But it is, like you say, when he's got the puck, you know what he's going to try to do, and you do everything you can to defend it. You need layers in order to block the shots, because you can't count on the one guy that are actually covering him to get in the lane. So you need layers underneath, and Anaheim were doing a great job of that. It meant they were blocking quite a few of his attempts. So, yeah, it does become a little easier to defend when nothing else is really going. Because, again, one of the dangers about Quinn is you're almost forced to use two guys to cover him. And then when you do that, he has to find the open guy for an even better opportunity. But right now it's hard to find that open guy because the guy isn't really there for him. So you're hoping that he doesn't get demoralized and then continue to lean on it and round back into shape, because there's no question they're going to need him the rest of the way.
The other topic that's come up a lot is Rick Tocchet. When you watch, like, do you like the style of play, or at least the best version of what you think it could be with Rick Tocchet? And, you know, a contract kind of hangs in the balance, and what impact does that have on players?
You dealt with the hand you're played here, or you play with the hand you're dealt. And then the players he's got right now is who he's got. It's like, I like for the fact that he seems he's got them riled in. They respect him, maybe fear him a little bit as well. I like those attributes in a coach, especially for this team, because we've seen what can happen when it turns into a country club. Did he find a way to quell or quash the locker room drama? No, he didn't. Neither did any of the other coaches. But I don't have any issues with him right now. If this team was screwed together a little bit different, had the horses, and we still have these results, then you might be at a different pace. But I think you need to solve the players first, and then we can start talking about the coaching afterwards.
It's kind of hard to get results when your number one center is not playing like a number one center, or anything quite like it. And I think there's a fatigue amongst everyone, and, you know, there's no shot attempts, there's no shots on goal. It's just it's gone from bad to worse. I didn't even know that was possible with Elias Pettersson right now.
No, and it's going to start affecting his ice time now. It starts affecting his power play time, which will make it even worse. But because these players, they need their ice time. They need their 20 minutes. They need their number one power play minutes. They need to get out there, feel the puck, feel like, oh, that the team is my team, and I need to carry this team. But that hill is just getting steeper and steeper for him to climb out of. And I don't have the answer. I don't think anybody has the answers to how you correct or solve this right now. You're hoping for an epiphany just happening one day. He walks into the rink and he dialed the time back a year and become that player again. But I'm at a loss for words as to how bad it's gone or gotten, and how quick it's gotten here.
Let's just fast forward to the summer here, rather than talk about these next 23 games here. But with the Pettersson situation that hangs in the balance, you know, it's so hard to just find a player that's done the things he's done, right? And if you make a trade, you're just doing the JT thing all over again, like we just discussed. You might be trading him for multiple depth pieces, and that's not necessarily going to solve the problem of, do we have a number one center? So is the pathway forward easiest to just keep him? And hope and figure out the solution with him of how to get him back to a point of game level.
Yeah, but the time or the sample size is now so big that you start to worry that it can't be done. If we're talking 2 months ago, he's like, oh, he was just right there. But it's so many times and so many different areas that's been talked about and moved and tried and it hasn't happened. So again, you have until the summer, there's no question. But you need to figure it out there. And yeah, the easy solution is just status quo and hope it will return. Does closing your eye and hoping for the best, stick your head in the ground kind of thing and wish, is that a way to operate your team and your business? I don't necessarily think so. But the whole league is aware of this. So like we're talking about value coming back. Again, you're going to have to get lucky now that the free agency or trade, no, you can't trade for this player you're looking for. You have to find it in free agency, and you're going to be paying more than you're paying PD for that player coming in to fix your problems. And that's all fine and well if you have the money. And then if you do get depth pieces back, it's okay, because now you're going out and finding, playing with house money in terms of UFAs. But you're banking on a lot of ifs here.
We're a week away from the trade deadline. Obviously, Brock Besser remains the biggest piece in play for the Canucks as an unrestricted free agent. The latest is Frank Saravalli said the Canucks' latest offer to Brock was 5 years at $40 million. So that would be eight per season. And Brock still looking for a little bit more term there because, you know, I would imagine he and his agent think he can get 7 years on the open market, having just scored 40 goals last year. This is, and you think about where the team is at right now and how disheartening this recent stretch has been. Sure, they're still in a playoff spot, but it's kind of hard to imagine this team spending assets to get better when they don't look like much of a contender right now, Yannick.
No, it doesn't. And Brock is one where you have to make a decision here. And I think that decision is, if somebody is giving you a first rounder, granted, he doesn't sign for what you want him to sign for. If he's taken whatever Alvin and Rutherford is comfortable with, you sign him. He's still a useful player, but he needs a PD or a JT to get him to a 30-goal score. He's not going to do that by himself. So if he'll sign for 5 years, eight is a little steep, but if he'll take the deal you want, then you sign him. If not, then you have to trade him. I wouldn't keep him as my own rental unless I'm only being offered a third-round pick. Like, if somebody's offering you any kind of value, you have to take it. Because, like you mentioned, you're not winning any Stanley Cup this year the way they're playing right now. So you might as well recruit and then see if you can... If you can do something down the road with the assets you're getting back here.
I want to end on a lighter note. Earlier this week, it was an anniversary of something that happened when you were playing, and I'm not even sure if we've ever asked you about this, but it was Vern Fiddler going by the bench and doing the face and AV cracking up, and I saw the video come up, and you're sitting right in front of AV, so I was curious if, you know, it's a memory that a lot of Canucks fans love. What was your memory of that?
Oh, yeah, that was of, is it Bieksa?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we were giggling at it. I think he was chasing him around, and he had enough of it or something like that. But I don't know. AV loved it to the point, but it was one of those, like, yeah, sure, it's like, ha, 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 and then kind of moved on. But I do remember AV getting quite the giggle out of it.
Yannick, always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
There is Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canuck Central. Not a lot of optimism. Nor should they be around the Vancouver Canucks right now.
Nor should they be. And in each, you know, it's easier to have optimism at game 23 than it is game 59.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, time is running out here.
And a week away from the trade deadline, everybody's talking about the team being a seller today. We'll get into that with the open. It's coming up in just a little bit. All right. Do want to tell you before break. Sports at 650 and Waypoint Insurance want to give you the ultimate Vancouver hockey experience. On March 15th, Chicago and their young megastar are in Vancouver. You could win a chance to see it live, plus an overnight stay at a luxury hotel in Vancouver. Whether it's a home game or a road trip, Waypoint is always the right call for your home, business, or auto insurance. Top shelf insurance and a top shelf hockey fan experience. Enter now on the contest page at sportsnet.ca/650. Contest closing this Sunday, March the 2nd. The Open is next on Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.